This is the session for municipalities, learning about municipalities and regional districts and the relationship between them. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a presentation that really has two parts to it. Okay, everybody sitting down, please. Okay, we're going to have a session about regional districts and municipalities, and we're going to start by having an overview of the regional district system, and that is going to be presented by Kelly Daniels. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kelly, for those of you who don't know him. He has recently retired or semi-retired after 35 years in local government, both as a city manager and as a CAO of regional governance, in communities ranging from 25,000 to 360,000, councils and boards ranging from 9 to 23 politicians, both in BC and Alberta. The organizations that Kelly has worked with are characterized by comprehensive strategic plans, strong business plans, moving vision into reality, and these organizations have been awarded national and international awards for on many fronts. He's shared his knowledge at conferences and symposiums in many provinces across Canada and Mexico. Kelly's also served on the board of directors for CAMA, which is the Canadian Association of Municipal Administrators, for over 9 years, representing both Alberta and BC. Kelly retired. His last position was with the Capital Regional District in 2013, and now he's doing important things like trekking in mountain regions around the world, such as Nepal, where he just returned from. And he's also the principal of Rethink Group, a consulting firm specializing in strategic planning and organizational development for local governments, nonprofits, and universities. So after Kelly has given his overview, then we're going to be joined by Mayor Greg Moore of Port Coquitlam, who's also chair of the Metro Vancouver Regional District Board. And he's going to be providing some firsthand commentary about what the relationship that Kelly's talking about looks like from his perspective. And Greg Moore, for any of you who don't know, was elected as Port Coquitlam's 15th mayor in November 2008, having been first elected to council in November 2002. As mentioned, he's chair of the Metro Vancouver Board. He's on TransLink Mayor's Council. He's a Board of Trustees with Municipal Finance Authority, a founding member of the BC Mayor's Caucus and various other positions, as well as a former executive member of UBCM. He's received a number of awards, including being named one of Vancouver Magazine's Power 50 in 2014. Before being elected to office, he was a Port Coquitlam City employee for 10 years, and he has a bachelor's in urban geography and planning from SFU and a master's of business administration from Royal Roads. As well, he's a lifelong resident of Port Coquitlam, along with his wife, Erin, and daughter, Madison. So Greg will be joining us when he has the opportunity. But in the meantime, I'm going to turn it over to Kelly and let him tell you about how municipalities and regional districts can work together best. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Nicola. And thanks for coming out. I know it's a long day, and I know it's tough to sort of keep to it. Typically, I really enjoy doing the newly elected officials seminars, and I think this is about my third one that I've had some role in, mostly because I can say a lot of things and not be held too much accountable for them. But I see a couple of board members from the Capital Regional District here who I've worked with before who will keep me honest, I'm sure. So good to see you folks again. I'm sure you came to local government with all sorts of perspectives on regional districts. And within those perspectives, there are certainly a number of misconceptions and I think some attitudes around regional districts that are not necessarily founded in reality. And I hope through this presentation I'm going to provide some information about regional districts that will try and provide another perspective from it, more from the perspective of what you can do to take advantage of the regional district system and how important it is for you to be involved with that, particularly those who are lucky enough to become board members. So regional districts, they are about 50 years old. They were first developed in the mid-60s. There are currently exactly 27 regional districts that cover most of the province. And they were primarily set up, from my understanding, to deal with to give the ability for municipalities and electoral areas to work together in partnerships. That was one of their primary objectives. And they do that extremely well. And I'll be showing you a number of examples, not only how you can develop those partnerships, but give you some examples of some very successful ones that you can learn from if you so wish. But that's not all that regional districts do. They are also a pretty powerful voice to other levels of government and external to your community, particularly if you're from a smaller community that can have some, or an electoral area that can have some difficulty in having your voice heard. Through a regional board, both speaking to provincial and federal level of governments can be that much more powerful. Certainly dealing with other regions, and there's conflicts with particularly bordering regional districts. But as well, as you'll see in some of the examples I'll give a little later, there's opportunities to do some partnering with other regional districts that can provide some pretty exciting services at some pretty cheap, and I shouldn't say cheap, some very good value for money, such as 911. One of the other functions of regional districts that a lot of people aren't aware of, other than being, that a lot of people aren't aware of, is that they borrow for municipalities and the region through the Municipal Finance Authority. And because of the function of regions and the fact that there's only 27 of them and they are able to represent and be severally responsible for the debt within their region, that's given British Columbia municipalities some of the best borrowing ratings that I know of in Canada. So there's some very important things that regional districts have developed over the years. But initially, there were four or five particular principles or particular things that regional districts, when they were inaugurated, were mandated to do. First of all, and this is a very important point for those in municipalities, it was very expressly determined that regional districts in BC were not going to be another form of government, another layer of government. Most other regional governments, certainly in Canada and a lot of them in the United States, are in fact another tier of government that can have some particularly regulatory control over the municipalities within their region. That is not the case in BC. It was expressly determined to be a federation where it was a table where municipalities and electoral areas could get together and choose the services that they wanted to provide. And that's also been an important tenet of regional districts throughout the years, because every regional district, as I'm sure you'll see in a few minutes with some of the slides, has developed differently because each one of them have a different character and each one of them have a different makeup in terms of the members that are there. Secondly, the legislation provides a template, a very easy mechanism for municipalities particularly, but municipalities and electoral areas, to provide services across boundaries. And those are particularly valuable in metropolitan areas for services like water, sewer, and parks. So in other provinces that may have different forms of regional government, or no forms of regional government at all, where they have to start every time to negotiate new servicing agreements, we in BC don't have that sort of anchor. We can start with some templates. We've got some good establishing bylaws that we can lean on to help develop those services that can cross borders. Thirdly, they are extremely flexible. They have they can be customized to provide any service in any scale. And this is particularly true after the review in 2000. Prior to 2000, the legislation had a long list in the Local Government Act of services that regional districts could provide. And if you weren't on that list, you had to either go to the minister or you just couldn't provide that service. In 2000, 2001, when the legislation changed, the change allowed regional districts to provide any service that the region felt was of value to their citizens. And the way they can provide that service is through those partnerships, through establishing bylaws. And you'll hear a little later that from my perspective, establishing bylaws are quite similar to what you might experience as partnership agreements in the private sector. You can partner with people within your region, and you can fashion those partnership agreements to say whatever makes sense for you and your electorate, right down to who gets the service, who pays for the service, how they pay for the service. All the details in that establishment bylaw can be tailored, and yet there's also templates that can help guide you through that. Fourthly, another benefit that I think is makes regional districts one of the most democratic forms of government around is that they can provide flexible service boundaries. And you'll see on those establishing bylaws a lot in regional districts where there'll be a map attached to the establishing bylaw that very clearly outlines who's in the service boundary and who's outside of the service boundary. And it can actually go around individual lots to make sure that those people who want and who are gaining access to that service are paying for the service, and those who do not access the service don't have to pay for the service. Very unique attribute for regional district legislation. And then finally, in the mid-60s, about 20% of the population of the province was in rural areas, unincorporated rural areas. And up to this point, or up to that point, the province was providing the local government for those areas. And there was a recognition that that needed to evolve. And so regional districts were given that responsibility for providing local government for the electoral areas. And rural planning and other services became a critical and major part of that. So I was going to speak a little bit on why partner for services, and there's some obvious and there's some not so obvious examples, but I've been told that the session right after this is about partnering, and there may be some overlap here, so I won't get into that a lot for you. But what I will say is that the obvious is if you can find a partner in a service that you need to provide or want to provide for your citizens, and that partner makes sense from economies of scale or the economies of administration, and I'll show you some examples in a few minutes where it really makes sense for some very small communities, municipalities of only 250 people, it does make sense. And the example that I gave yesterday around that from my experience was in the Capital Region, there's a recreation facility that three municipalities have been paying into for a number of years. And prior to my time, there was at least two or three times when the whole economy of scale thing was challenged by those communities. And they brought in consultants to take a look at, is it the most cost-effective way to run that recreation facility, the way it was set up through the regional district model, or was everyone getting a fair benefit? And every time in those service review came back and said, you can't do it cheaper any other way, so stick with it. And I think for the most part, that is the key value for partnering. And I'll just back up. The last thing I'll say is the result of that is thousands of partnerships around this province. I'm sure on a in a ratio of municipalities to partnerships, British Columbia has more per capita or per municipality, per local government than any other province because the mechanism is set up through regional districts to do that. And while it says thousands of service partnerships, I know that there's over 3,000 partnerships around this province between local governments and electoral areas in regional districts. So as I mentioned, regional districts are federations, and I'm going to talk a little bit now about how the structure gets formed around regional districts. As I'm sure many of you are probably aware by now, Regional districts are made up of members of councils and, in most cases, a number of electoral area directors that come to the table. In the case of municipalities, they are appointed from the municipal councils, and in just about every case, that is the case, although I'm aware in the capital region, there's two municipalities, the City of Victoria and Saanich, who use on the ballot or put on the ballot an opportunity for people to express their preference as to who they want to go to the regional board to represent them. It's not, the councils are not bound by that vote, but it does give them a strong indication as to who the community would like to see at the regional table. And both municipalities are really consistent, and I'm sure you would understand why they wouldn't want to go against what the community wishes. You don't ask the community and then do something different. But they send the representatives to the board table that the community expresses through their vote on election day. But I believe those are the only two. Is that correct? Yeah. The electoral area directors are voted, are elected in their jurisdiction directly by the population, and they act sort of as a ward system, a representative of an electoral area or an individual ward as they come to the board. And the advantage and the determination that was made, again, early in the formation of regional districts is the region members, the regional board members at that inaugural meeting, the first meeting in December, then vote to elect the chair. And that's done on an annual basis to ensure that the chair always retains the confidence of the board members that are there. I also might mention, because it came up a question yesterday, in the appointment of the regional representatives from council, there is nothing in the Act that I'm aware of that expressly directs how the council chooses those representatives. Still in okay ground? Okay. After retiring for 2 years, you never know what changes can be made. But many councils do it their own unique ways. And I know of many councils who they just let the mayor choose who comes to the board on an annual basis. Others do it through an election at council. Others, they set up a committee to determine. So it's really up to you as a council to determine how and who you want to go from your council and represent you at the board level. Before I get to that slide, now that you've got the board in place, some of those misconceptions or some of those confusing things where people start getting a little fuzzy when you start talking about regional districts is how the province determines the number of board members that comes from each municipality to the board table. And I know in the Capital Regional District, where we had 23 board members, there was a large number of, in fact, a majority of councils from Victoria and Saanich, the large municipalities, where they'd send 4 or 5 representatives to the board table. And there's a lot of folks who don't understand how that gets set. And not only that, it gets even more confusing because they'll come to the board table with this wonderful thing called a number of votes that are attached to their position. And it's typically 5, but it can be 4. And then those smaller municipalities, bless their heart, some of them only get 2 votes and others get 1. And a large number of the electoral areas, depending what the voting unit is in your community, you only get 1 vote around the table. It can be confusing, and I'm not going to get into the details of how you do that, how that's determined for your community, but it can be one of those confusing parts of regional districts. And what I can say, it's a mechanism that's purpose is twofold. One, it's to recognize the need to develop a sense of fairness among boards where you will have some municipalities of 250 people, where there's other municipalities that will have a population of over 100,000. How do you make sure there's a balanced weighting of vote between them and a method of dealing with a form of representation by population? So both of those Both of those endeavors are determined to try and balance the weight around the board and develop the fairness between municipalities and the people. Sorry, I've got a cold and I'm drying up quite quickly here. To make it fair in terms of when you start applying those votes to various issues on your board table. And here's the third very confusing thing about regional districts. And often those people who think they know local government because they've been to council meetings a number of times appear to a regional board table for the first time and cannot figure out why out of a board of 23, there's only three people voting on a particular issue. And then the next item on the agenda, there's 50% of the board voting on an item. And then the next part of the agenda, the whole board votes on an item. And again, it's, I think, one of the strengths of regional districts to allow that representation and that flexibility around a table, a federation of members. The three special voting rules that the Act allows for would be first the unweighted corporate vote. And in my experience, this is typically, for most agendas, the most common vote that you'll see on your agenda. It's every director gets one vote, and it's typically to deal with the corporate matters of the board, regulatory bylaws, those sorts of things. So everyone is equal in terms of their vote, and everyone gets a vote. A little more controversial item is the weighted corporate vote. This can be used and abused, the weighted vote, although, again, in my experience, very seldom is it abused. But it allows or requires the directors to apply that vote that the Local Government Act gives your position to weighting the value of that vote on an item. And that's typically in matters of finance and contracts. And you can generally use that as your guideline. If there's an item like your budget, it's approved on a weighted vote. And it's a recognition that when you're joint and severally responsible for the financial function of your regional districts, those that pay the most are going to have the highest vote to determine the contract that is going to bind the region contractually on a financial matter or for things like a budget. The last vote is the stakeholder vote, and this is the opportunity when people involved in a service, and only those involved in a service, vote on the operation of that service. So in the example I gave earlier of the three municipalities who operate the Panorama Rec Center in the Capital Region, the only people around that board table who would vote on the operation of that recreation facility would be the representatives that come from those three municipalities. Again, that's not often understood. A lot of the public thinks that the whole board gets to vote and control that Panorama Rec Center because they don't understand what actually happens on a day-to-day basis at the board table. So that's the voting rules. And as much as it can be a little confusing, typically I find you don't have to worry about it as a new board member because most regional district administrations identify the voting structure, the voting weight, and who gets to vote on your agendas right next to the item. And if you don't have that, you make sure your administration starts doing that because otherwise it can be very confusing for you. So we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about some services. Get my pointer out. And this is a bit of a confusing slide. And all I'm going to do on this slide, just because of lack of time, is give you a sense of how to read it and why it might be valuable for you as a new board member. It, too, is with the package or on the website, the LGA website. This presentation is there. So if you find this valuable, you want to go back and refer to it, please go there. But when you're a new director and you want to start a service, you want to move forward and start doing something for your community, the obvious first job is to determine what service you want to provide. And while that may sound really obvious, the important thing about that and the little more in-depth thing around that service is going to be defined in what is termed your establishing bylaw that established that service. And it needs to be very, very clearly identified what service you want to provide, how much you're willing to pay maximum, how much you're willing to tax from a maximum perspective, who's going to benefit from that service, and how are you going to define that within your jurisdiction, whether it's a municipality or electoral area. So you have to think about it a little bit. It's not just as easy as, well, I want to do dog control. There's a little bit more of a thought process around that. And then secondly, it's really to your benefit to look around and find out who else might be interested in that service. Where might there other, be other logical partners for you that can help pay the costs and carry the administrative burden of that service? And there's typically four, in the province, there's typically four jurisdictions you can look at. And this is the helping you read the chart perspective. You can keep it local. If you're an electoral area director in a small municipality, you can decide after looking around, there's no partner you want. You're just going to look after the service yourself and just provide it to your citizens. You can look at it as a sub-regional service. In other words, a set of municipalities and electoral areas. So again, using that same example, 3 out of the 13 municipalities in the region decided that's who makes sense. While others in the region might participate in this recreation facility, we're the 3 big players, and we are the 3 that want to pay for it, and we'll carry any sort of excess around that. You can consider it as a regional service. In other words, you want to promote it at the board level, as everyone in the region is going to benefit from this, and therefore you want everyone to participate. Or it can be a multi-regional service. And by this, I mean it can, if it's a service, particularly like something like a park that might go across a boundary into another regional district, that you may want to go and approach neighboring regional districts to provide that service. And the most common there, and you'll see some of the examples in the chart, would be things like 911 services and regional parks. Then thirdly, how do you want to deliver that service? Once you've figured out who your partners are going to be, there's, again, 4 typical models that are common in British Columbia. One is the direct provision. In other words, the staff within the region can provide the service directly, and so you're starting to see how you can read the chart. Here's some examples of local service that are provided directly through the regional district. Here's some sub-regional services that are provided directly by the regional district, and so on. Contract publicly, and this is an often well-used service where you can look at one municipality or a group of municipalities that are within the region and say, they have the capacity already to provide the service. I just want to access it from them within the regional model. And so the municipality itself or another public partner, in some cases, as you'll see with the TNRD, it can be electoral areas, a group of electoral areas who are providing a service that actually contract it to municipalities. And here's some examples of the types of services that are provided, again, locally through a contract and sub-regionally and so forth. A contract to the private sector to provide services is an obvious option. And then maybe not so obvious, and one of the tools that is used quite a bit at the Capital Regional District, we utilize arm's-length bodies such as public commissions or existing NGOs that are in the community. We can contract to them to provide the service. And that can be really advantageous for services that can be very politically sensitive, where you want them to be able to operate effectively in the community without necessarily the scrutiny or the conflict that can happen at the board table. Now, within those bylaws, you as the board, and I would suggest all of these arm's length relationship, you establish those commissions through bylaw, and you can determine when that arm's length body needs to come to you to check in. And often that's to approve their budget or if they want to expand their mandate, those sorts of things. So there can be a degree of control in an arm's length process and still allow for them to operate without some of the encumbrances that you do find sometimes at the regional table. So that's all I'm going to say on that slide at this point. I think you can see how it can operate, and it can give you an opportunity if you're thinking of some of those services or it makes sense for you. Regional districts really like bragging about their services and really like sharing their experiences. So feel free to contact the South Cariboo District about how their contract is going with the private sector and operating their facility, their airport facility. Okay. So I'm going to take a look at three regional districts in a little more detail to show you and to give an example of how different those 27 regional districts can evolve. And believe me, the character of the regional districts and the services that they provide are often determined by the structure and the number of people within their region. And I've attended other regional districts, particularly now that I'm retired and I'm working for some other regional districts, and they'll be aghast at the number of services or the type of services the capital region will be providing, for example, and how few another region will be providing. And I think it's just really important to understand that again, is one of the true values of regional districts, that ability to be able to fashion your district in the way you want to in the services that they need to provide. So the first example, Columbia Shuswap Regional District. It's a region that crosses three mountain ranges, making it a region of sub-regions, in fact. It has a large rural population, where you can see there 60% of the population in the Columbia District is rural, clustered mainly around the region's four municipalities. CSRD's unique service personality is explained by its large rural population and large sub-regional population clusters. CSRD plays an important rural services like land use planning, regulation, and provision of basic services like water, fire protection, and street lighting. So they really are a regional district that is focusing on service to the electoral areas much more than necessarily the municipalities. As you can see by the chart, their budget is about $40 million a year, which represents 68% of the total spending of all of the local governments within their region. So in the same part, they're a large player within the Columbia District. And they provided, in 2012, 96 services to those communities, focusing mostly on rural and sub-rural regional services. On the other hand, the Thompson-Nicola Regional District population is split among 10 rural electoral areas and 11 non-contiguous municipalities, with Kamloops accounting for about two-thirds of the TNRD total. In contrast, all but one of the remaining municipalities is below a 5,000 population. Being composed of one large regional center in many small towns and rural communities, TNRD tends to be focused on issues faced by its smaller jurisdictions and has aspired to be a regional service bureau. And I find this fascinating, very unique approach to regional services. So in this role, TNRD provides services such as community planning, building inspection, etc. But what they do is they set up the service to be provided to those rural communities and then contract to those smaller municipalities that are looking for that service, which I think is extremely positive and very unique within the province. 16% of the total, and it reflects, these numbers reflect those sorts of service levels, 130 services, about 16% of the total spending within the region. And finally, the capital region. You wouldn't think I'd need to read the notes on that one, but it's a mid-sized metro area with a population of about 360,000 people, has 13 municipalities, ranging from less than 2,500 people to over 110,000 in population. Members of the Federation expect regional strategic leadership, and by far the majority of our expenses and our staff effort goes to providing regional services, mostly regional planning and things such as sewer, water. We provide water services in different forms throughout the region, and have a limited role in interlocal and rural services. So again, a little more in-depth on the TNRD. The TNRD was established itself as a regional service bureau, as I mentioned. 9 of the 11 municipalities are below 5,000, with the smallest of 250. And as I mentioned, the regional district provides building regulation to those from the 10 electoral areas and contracts to the 9 smallest municipality. The obvious advantages for that sort of model for the TNRD is it business benefits because regulations are harmonized. Every one of those nine municipalities and the electoral areas all work under the same regulations and the same tendencies of a building inspection department, if I can use that word. Plus, some municipalities as the size of 250 would never be able to form their own building inspection and retain staff. So it allows those municipalities to access the service without having to worry about that larger issue of retaining staff within their region. And then costs are pooled. And I think you would speak to anyone in the TNRD and they can tell you the cost would be way more expensive if they were having to provide those services themselves. In the capital region, this is another, I think, fairly unique story. Affordable housing is a very important issue and within the capital region. Within their region, 11 of the 13 municipalities have got together and have agreed to contribute to a trust that represents about $1 million a year that would go to acquiring housing, low-cost housing for the community. And $1 million doesn't sound a lot for housing, but it's more the importance of the politics because the federal and provincial governments often want financial participation from the region before they're willing to lever any money to housing. And the CRD has been able to lever well over $50 million towards local housing projects just with that $1 million component. The other maybe not so obvious advantage is that housing is built in primarily in four of the 11 communities. So communities such as Oak Bay, which are basically all built out and there's not a lot of opportunity for additional housing, but they recognize that it's a regional issue, contributes to the fund that they know that those funds are going to be placed in other communities other than themselves. So again, a very unique service, one that shows extremely high levels of cooperation and a real success story. The last one I have is North Island 911. Check my time here. Okay. North Island 911. In the North Vancouver Island, six regional districts and parts of the mainland have joined together to enter into a partnership to create an emergency communications, dispatch, and response service. It is led by the CVRD, the Cowichan Valley Regional District, and is governed by a board of administrators from the regional districts. They all knew that the service was going to be expensive and technically complex and too much for any one of those regional districts to put on themselves and take it on alone. The six regional districts created a corporation to deliver the service, and the corporation did not see the need to directly provide the service. Again, that service provision matrix that I showed you, the determination was we can contract out to this in a combination of other municipalities within the region and some other private sector components. So ECOM is contracted to provide emergency communications, RCMP for police dispatch, the City of Campbell River provides the fire dispatch, and the Provincial Ambulance Service provides ambulance dispatch. And the result is the largest E911 service in Canada that covers over 56,000 square miles. So I'm just about done here. I think the mayor is, I've seen him, there he is, good. So I think my personal opinion is regional districts have an extremely bright future because of that success and the growing success for all of the negatives and the difficult part, because from my perspective, whenever I've been faced by the press or some members of the public who come out of a board meeting where there's been tough debate and lots of acrimony across the table between municipalities and they throw up their hands and say, God, regional district, and particularly this one, is dysfunctional. I always say to them, no. That's when regional districts are functioning their best. It's to resolve those sorts of issues at the table. Democracy is messy. It can get ugly. Personalities can get involved. But when you look at other provinces, those issues are often thrown up to an independent board or often to the ministry's office, the minister's office, where in BC, a lot of those issues are dealt with, and they are eventually dealt with at the regional table. So I think that's a major function of regional districts, to deal with the tough stuff. And regional districts often do things like solid waste, sewer, economic development, transportation, and housing. Some of the toughest issues regions, and particularly municipalities, have to deal with. Let me see. The key message that I want to deliver then, just before I wrap up, is that regional districts, and Mayor Drew yesterday, I think, had a great quote, if I can use his words. He said, when asked a question about, well, some small municipality only had one vote out of over 100 in the table, why do they need to even be at the table? And his message was, it's not about the vote, it's about the voice. What you do at the regional table and how effective you are and how effective your community is not about how many votes you have, because my experience is the voice of one person, particularly if they're working effectively with other members of their board, can move mountains and can provide all sorts of services to the members. So it's really up to you to make your region function the way it can and to the best benefit of the citizens in your community. There's lots of support. I'll just skim over this slide. There's lots of support around the province for regional districts when they are having difficulties, right from UBCM to leadership training like this through LGLA. And I'll leave you with one final slide. It's an independent perspective from Andrew Sankton, who's a political scientist, a very renowned political scientist with Western University in Ontario. I was fortunate enough to be on a panel in Saskatoon when the Saskatoon and Regina were looking at different regional models, because they needed to grapple with some of the smaller communities on their borders and how they were going to handle the growth that they were experiencing. And they had representatives from across Canada. There was at least four or five of us representing different forms of regional government, and Andrew was there as the academic. And he basically said when asked that the BC form of regional government is by far the best in Canada and the best, in his mind, anywhere in North America. His comments were basically that regional districts are unique, obviously, but a unique made-in-BC solution to service problems faced but rarely resolved elsewhere. That's that functional board happening on tough issues. It's Canada's most flexible and successful system for regional and sub-regional services, and the best of both worlds, leaving municipalities the opportunity to do what they do best and leaving the larger, broader issues between boundaries at the regional level. Partnership in the truest sense of the term, not a level of government, an arrangement that enables urban and rural areas of BC to partner in making British Columbia communities better for the people who serve them and live there. So that's my presentation on regional districts, and Mayor Moore is going to come up now and speak a bit about the practicalities, the war stories about the realities of working in regional districts. I painted the rosy picture. There's also another side. Mayor Moore.
Are we going to do questions after this?
Yeah.
Thanks. First, let me say congratulations to all you newly elected folks. Welcome to our family, where we can battle with each other and debate with each other, and hopefully we're still friends at the end of the day. Right, Sharon? See, she's ignoring me already. Life's bigger than this little elected thing that we do. So I just want to share some stories. I think I'm going to share more success stories than war stories or getting beaten up, not agreeing, about how Metro Vancouver as a regional district has come together on certain regional plans that we've done. And as much as, and I will try to relate these so it's regardless that it's Metro Vancouver, it could be any regional district, the examples that I'm going to share with you. So one of the things that we have, and on the first one, I will share something with you that makes it quite interesting. On the first one, it's our regional growth strategy. So Metro Vancouver, I think, is the only regional district now onto our second regional growth strategy, which is basically an official community plan for the whole regional district, how growth is going to occur, where Where are the areas that we're going to protect, whether that's environmentally sensitive areas, agricultural, industrial land, how we're going to focus on transportation corridors, even though we don't control the TransLink and the Transit Authority, still good urban planning and municipalities or local governments talking together can facilitate a better transportation and transit authority at the end of the day. And part of that is trying to figure out how this overlays onto your local OCP or your local zoning map. Right, and there is some rub every once in a while on that. I think Metro Vancouver is—it's always named as one of the most livable areas in the world, and I think that's because we've collaborated and twice now in 15 years have unanimously passed a regional growth strategy. Right, so we've all—and by the way, a regional growth strategy has to be passed unanimously. So it forces you to negotiate with each other on how that works and how you're going to grow and what areas are going to accept what types of growth. The devil is in the detail around implementation around it, and it's maybe it's been mentioned here, but it's out there is in the media that you know we had a disagreement with Langley on the interpretation of their regional context statement. So what that is you have your official community plan, you have a regional context statement that is basically the glue between your OCP and the regional growth strategy. It's the legal side of it, and both parties have to agree to the words in that regional context statement. Langley, the district of Langley, not the city of Langley, the district of Langley and us had a disagreement on that interpretation. So we went to court. We needed a third party to help us decide. We lost as Metro Vancouver. We were very concerned with the language that the judge used in that finding, such things as unelected, unaccountable. It should be left to the local municipality when determining these things, which was frankly contrary to the community charter and the regional growth strategy growth legislation. So we challenged it. We went to arbitration. One, we knew that we were in a tough pickle from a legal perspective on actually winning it, but we needed to clarify the language that was being used and to focus the dispute on the interpretation of the regional context statement and not about the questioning, to your part, Kelly, the questioning of why regional districts even do this. So that was our reason. We lost again, but we did get clarity that it was based we were disputing a sentence or two within the regional context statement, not whether a regional growth strategy should actually exist. So there's kind of, a little bit of an ugly story, but, you know, you're going to disagree, and sometimes it's okay to go to the courts and get someone else, a third party, to adjudicate on that. One other example I think is very much a success story. We haven't built it yet, but the provincial and federal government has come down with new regulations on sewage treatment facilities, and they've basically looked at them all across the all across Canada. They've determined which facilities are good from their environmental perspective, which ones need to move to secondary treatment by 2020, and which ones can hold off and move to secondary treatment by 2030. This is something that is a big pain in the butt for us as local government because they make the policy decision on what should happen and we're the ones that have to implement it and we're the ones that have to pay for it. So that we don't disagree with the environmental reasons on why to do it, but the fact that they dictate to us that we have to do it with no guarantee of funding that comes with it really rubs us the wrong way. But anyways, on the successful side of the Metro Vancouver and the Federation coming together, the Lionsgate Sewage Treatment Plant is a facility that we have to upgrade and move to secondary treatment. We actually have to relocate the whole facility to do that. And we've all agreed. We've bought the land. We've had excellent consultation in the North Shore. Everybody's on board with it. The municipality's on board with it. The neighborhood's on board with it. And that's gone excellent. As a regional district, what we did from a just Metro Vancouver perspective, we identified the Lionsgate Sewage Treatment Plant as our number one Build Canada request. So as a regional district, we are not asking for any money for anything else except for that Lionsgate Sewage Treatment Plant. Right, so that's the power. So we can say of our 2.4 million residents that we're representing, it's not Anisys, it's not the water treatment facilities, it's not anything else. It's the Lionsgate Sewage Treatment Plant. And I think that gives us a lot of validity when we're doing it. Now, of course, all of us as local government, we've got our local projects that we're still going to apply for Build Canada, because most of us in Metro Vancouver are under 100,000 people, so we fall into a different category, so we're not taking away from the larger pots. But that's how we've come together, and I think hopefully there will be a good news story at the end of that, that has been recognized as our top priority. Two other examples that I'll give you. One is our regional, we have a regional park service like most regional districts do. We decided about a year and a half ago to do a review of our park service to make sure that it was delivering the services and protecting the parts of the environment that we wanted it to do. And it was quite an excellent exercise to go through. It was very educational, I think, for not only the directors, because it's a service that we've had for about 50 years now, and it's never really been reviewed. So we reviewed it, and we looked at things like what makes a regional park versus a local park? What parks should maybe that are local parks should actually maybe be uploaded or elevated to Metro Vancouver to look at because they're more of a natural setting and an ecosystem protection type thing? Or what parks are more active? Now, we don't have any soccer fields, but what parks are more active from a trail perspective that maybe should be given to the municipality? Burnaby Lake is a prime example. Burnaby owns a majority of the Burnaby Lake park system, yet Metro, I think, has 30% of it, and Burnaby has 70%. So it's confusing for people that there's two different kind of park managers there. So, you know, we looked at that and how does that affect it. So we came together as a federation to do that. And one of the things that we learned is as much as we got a wonderful park system in Metro Vancouver, we're underfunding it compared to most of the other regional districts on a per capita basis in the province. So it was quite revealing and quite helpful for us to understand that, you know, maybe we need to put more focus into our regional park system. And also we looked at what are we trying to accomplish with a regional park system in an urban area like we're in? Is it more about protecting the environmental side of it and less exposure? Or what type of level of service do you, services do you allow into your park system? And that was really good. The last thing that I want to talk about, I think, is a validation of a regional district coming together, and then I'd love to take some questions on some of this stuff or other things, is we just launched a new task force at Metro Vancouver on the regional economy to take a look at what is local government's role, but what's Metro Vancouver's role in economic development. In the past, we've had some not very good outcomes, maybe that's the wrong term, but we've had some disputes on regional economic development. We tried it in the 90s. It didn't work because, frankly, one municipality didn't trust the other municipality on who, you know, Microsoft came to town, and how come Richmond got in and it didn't come to me in Port Coquitlam? I blame the Metro Vancouver for it, right? Well, you know, at the end of the day, frankly, with all of these large corporations, us as local governments, we're the last ones that they tell, right? We brought in someone that is a consultant that helps big corporations locate, whether it's a logistics facility or a head office. And he said, one of the things he said to us is, listen, we do all of this analysis, more analysis than you can shake a stick at, on tax levels, income tax levels, business, unionization, all this sort of stuff. We determine where we want to go. Then we go talk to the federal government for tax breaks. Then we go talk to the provincial government for tax breaks. And after we've got that all nailed down, we knock on the mayor's office door, and we say, we're coming here in a municipality, and if you'd like us, we need you to rezone that property in the next couple months because we want to start building, and you're happy to see us. And you say, okay, because we're bringing a couple hundred jobs with us. He goes, you're the last people we talk to. So how do we take that knowledge as a regional district, and how do we present ourselves? Not to say that we shouldn't do local economic development. Absolutely, right? You know, the Vancouver Economic Development Commission, Surrey, Coquitlam has an economic development officer. Absolutely, those roles should still exist. But I would argue that someone in China doesn't know where Surrey is. doesn't know where Coquitlam is. But I bet you they know where Vancouver is, and I bet you they've heard of a Metro Vancouver type thing. So that's how we can come together to help promote ourselves and do that. But I think the one thing that I think we're going to do with this task force is not only bring us together as local governments to help promote the greater whole, and where they decide to go after that will be up to them, and we'll try to have better taxes than the neighbor and all that other jazz, or a quicker rezoning process. I think the key to that is something that is needed more by local government. I think we can't think that we're so good we don't need to have other people sitting around the table with us. I think we need to have the business, like just on this one specifically, I think other topics too. But so I think we're going to go out and we're going to talk, and we've already started conversations with the Port Authority, with YVR, with the private sector that's actually multinationals in our area that want to help promote economic development because it's good for their business, but it's also good for this region. So if you have all of those different disciplines sitting around a table and talking about the good parts of our regional district, I think there you've got a winning solution there that we can start to drive more economic development activity within our region anyways. And I would suspect in every regional district that should be a function that is looked at. It's outside of that core competency, it's outside of the core services that you're delivering, but there isn't any other, in my opinion, there really isn't any other body that can set that table and get the right people sitting around that table to have that discussion and then to present a common face as you go forward. So I think, yeah, do you have any questions? We got one more? Never.
I'm an amalgamation skeptic, so I think the RDs could be the answer to the public that says, well, why don't you get together? And on the one hand, showing that we already are amalgamated in terms of service delivery, but maybe looking at reforms to our RD system to maybe make them even more functional as our amalgamated forms of regional government. So,
Well, that's exactly my view, especially in Metro, because unlike some of the more rural areas, you as a city, you might have your own garbage dump, so you don't need the regional district to do it, or you might do your own water filtration, so it's not an RD thing. But in Metro, 84% of the Metro Vancouver budget is water, sewer, and garbage, right? So frankly, we're a big utility. And I could never, nobody, maybe Vancouver, maybe Surrey has the size, but no one else in our federation could even get close to delivering the quality of service for the price that we get it at if we didn't amalgamate it, right? We have 5 sewage treatment facilities and 2 water filtration plants, right? It's just a no-brainer. So what I tell people around the amalgamation is we've already amalgamated the expensive stuff. Maybe there's some other stuff we could look at. We've got integrated police. It's not complete. Maybe we do a little bit more with it. Maybe there's some other things that we could look to integrate a little bit more. But all the expensive stuff's already been amalgamated. So you're really not gonna save anything, actually. Yeah. Well, and that, I think that's an excellent example of how a regional district can come together, especially if you're a regional district that has local governments next door to each other, so the homeless population is very transient and can get on a bus or something. But at Metro Vancouver, we do have a housing corporation. We have 4,500 housing units. We house about 10,000 people a month. And I will tell you, and I will brag a little bit, it's break-even. It doesn't cost the taxpayers a penny because we do charge market rent on some that help subsidize the other parts of the housing unit. So that's kind of cool. But we are also the housing secretary or the homelessness secretariat. So as much as we don't put any Metro Vancouver money, we're the ones that distribute the federal government homelessness money. It's about $16 million that we distribute. We don't do it as a board. We bring in each area has a rep or something that they bring forward.
Yeah, it's not a strategy.
No.
They don't have a strategy. So they fund the homeless funding for the housing, and then they fund the
For sure, and that is something that that a regional district would be perfect at doing. One of the things that I think the other part that I talked about it a little bit with Lionsgate, and you could use it as an example here. Metro Vancouver, we kind of have three things. We're a utility, we're a policy group, which is our regional growth strategy, air quality, all that sort of stuff, but we're also a political body. And so we leverage that political body to make political statements, and we actually are co-chairing a national housing strategy thing that was started out of Metro Vancouver to try to elevate that issue on a national stage as well. The former mayor of New Westminster, Wayne Wright, was heading that up. And now Richard Stewart, the mayor of Coquitlam, is heading up the Housing Corporation. We'll take that forward. Thanks.
So a huge thank you to Mayor Moore and to Kelly Daniels for that presentation. I think that covered a lot of interesting territory. If you want to just stay put for a little few minutes, the next panel is just going to get itself organized and get up here. It's on collaboration and partnership. So we should be starting in the next couple of minutes.